Smita today doesn't necessarily mean what it always meant. You know that Moshe Rabbeinu, Smicha to Yehoshua, and the mantle of Smicha passed Ish Mipi Ish from Moshe Rabbeinu through the generations, and there was a tremendous desire to keep the Smicha chain going for as long as possible. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells the story about how Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was in a very precarious position where he was being chased by governmental officials who didn't want him to convey smicha, and he found a certain junction where he gave smicha to certain rabbanim, including Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, including Rabbi Meir, who were able to keep the tradition alive for a period of time. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was found by the authorities and he was killed on the spot. But we get the impression that at a certain point in time, around then, the institution of Ish Mipi Ish, receiving smicha from Moshe Rabbeinu, came to an end. So that smicha was the smicha that enabled a person to function as a dayan in Eretz Yisrael. The appointment of smicha had to be in Eretz Yisrael. It enabled a person to be a samach for purposes of sitting on the Sanhedrin. Only a samach would have a din of a zakein mamre. There are a number of nafkaminas in terms of what it means to be a samach. It doesn't appear at first glance that it was always necessary for a person to have been a samach in order to be royal ahara, to be able to paskin shilas. But there's an interesting essay by Rav Moshe Feinstein at the beginning of Polish and Mishpat Chelek Aleph, in which he argues that it seems to him that it's mistaber that if there was a makom where somebody had genuine bona fide smicha, and there was somebody else in the same makom who was capable of being Moreh Hara, that the other person had no right to be Moreh Hara in a location of somebody who was an actual samach. Nonetheless, the institution of smicha, we're told, was revived in a different type of form. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Hei Amud Beis, indicates that there's a need for a person to be noter reshus, to receive reshus from a Rebbe who is an accepted individual, an accepted posek, somebody who is Moreh Hara, and he has a Talmud. So before that Talmud can go out and be Moreh Hara, or function as a Rav, the Talmud has to receive a shus from his Rebbe, because if he doesn't receive a shus, then there isn't a clear indication that he's been appropriately vetted. Even if the Talmud is a Talmud Chacham, it could be that he hasn't been tested, that when he explains things clearly, that he's able to connect to his audience in order to convey the message of his teaching in an effective fashion. So there was a Talmud who didn't have the appropriate Netilas Rishus, who was talking about May Beitzim, and it sounded to the people that he was talking about May Bitsoyim, swamp water, and he said May Beitzim are not Mitami, but they thought that he was saying that that swamp water is not Mitami, so a Mikshol came out of it. So the Gemara says that we learn from this incident that a Talmud can't be Mora, a Talmud can't really function as a Rav without receiving a Tilas Rishus. So if you look in the Shulchan Aruch and Yoredei and Simon Reish Mem Beis, you look in the Aruch HaShulchan has a discussion about this in Simon Aleph and Kosher Mishpat, as well as Simon Reish Mem Beis in Yoredei as well. Smicha nowadays, says the Aruch HaShulchan, is really a Zecha for the original Smicha. And Smicha nowadays is really all about Netilas Rishus, says the Ramah. And the Vilna Gaon quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Hei Amud Beis as the Makkah for what Smicha is about nowadays. Nonetheless, even smicha nowadays is at least a zecha of what smicha was back then, and we can learn from the principles of what the original smicha was all about, what would be the parameters of the question that we're discussing today, namely, can smicha be revoked bizman hazeh? The Gemara in Maseches Gittin and Daf Peches Amud Beis asked the question of how we maase gitti bizman hazeh. How can we coerce gitin bizman hazeh? It requires a bezdin to require to do coercion in those cases where coercion is warranted up halacha. So the Gemara there is talking about though the Rabbanim in Chutzlars, how they could be Maase Gitti if they were not smuchin from Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, well, they're doing the Shlichusai or Eretz Yisrael. So Tosfos says, well, how do we do things not only in Chutzlars, but in the time of Tosfos, there was no smicha for Moshe Rabbeinu altogether. So how could we have any type of real bezdin functioning that needs to have smicha? Like, for example, you need a bezdin to perform Geiris. Tosfos assumes that you need a bezdin of smuchim in order to perform geirus. That's the question. Tosfos says there's a whole essay. If you look in Rav Schechter's Sefer Eretz Tzvi, as a kuntra sasmicha, it talks about the different shittos as to exactly what's required for bezdin l'geirus. So Tosfos assumes that you need smuchim, and Tosfos says, well, just like we have a principle of shlichus sayoka avdinan from the rabbanim of Chutz La'aretz there at Yisrael, so there's a temporal notion of shlichus sayo as well, shlichus sayo de kamaika avdinan, that the smuchim nowadays are operating as the shluchim of the original smuchim. It's sort of a hemshake of the original smicha. So we see that there's an inyan, even if the notion of smicha nowadays is in fact more circumscribed to the realm of Netilas Rishus, and is not a smicha Ishmi Pi Isha Moshe Rabbeinu. Nonetheless, the zecher of smicha that the Aruch HaShulchan talks about still really does have significance. We sometimes utilize it even in so far as saying that the smuchim of nowadays are a hemshech, are a continuation of the shlichus sayo de kamayo of the original smuchim. So bearing all of that in mind, bearing in mind that there might be some differences, but there might be similarities as well, let's look at what the Mekoros have to say about this question. So the first Gemara that's germane to the discussion is the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about how there's a machlokis of the Chachamim Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho regarding Eidus Miyuchedis. If you have Eidim that testify about something, but they didn't see their testimony together, one Eidus saw, let's say it was a loan transaction, so one Eid can testify they saw the lender give the borrower the money, and the other Eid testifies that they saw the borrower admit that he owes the money. So he didn't see the same thing. They're not testifying about exactly the same moment in time, but they're testifying about the same obligation. So is that considered to be a valid eidus or not? So Rabbi Shimon ben Korcho says it's a valid eidus. Then there's a seven machlokes, Rabbi Nosson the Chachamim, as to whether if I have two eidim, we'll testify one after the other. They don't testify at the same time, they testify one after the other. Rabbi Nosson says even that's considered to be a good eidus. So the question was, do we hold like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho, or do we not hold like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Lamed Amud Beis brings the following story. The Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim, Rabbi Mishtaki, to lead to Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, and Lemismichay. Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim wanted very much to confer a smicha upon Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina. You need somebody who's already a samach to be able to confer the smicha. You have to get three musmachim, three confers together. Could be the only one of them has to be a samach, but you have to get three individuals, at least one samach together in order to convey the smicha. And it didn't work out. So that's an interesting question. So today we have a lot of people give out smicha as yechidim, it seems. That seems to be a difference already. That the assumption is that with this netilas rishus type of smicha, netilas rishus from a particular rebbe, that you could be more rasame. So it doesn't seem that the assumption is among a lot of masmichim that they require two others. In our yeshiva, we've always had institutional smicha, so it's the institution. It's all the rabbanim are conferring smichas here, at least three rabbanim. Before I came on board, so the smicha was being signed, the actual klap of the smicha was being signed by two rabbanim. After I came on board, so now we actually do have three people who are signing this mitzvah. But anyway, so Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim thought that Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina was worthy of receiving smicha, but he wasn't able to somehow arrange for smicha to be given. Lo kamistaya milsa. Lo kamistaya milsa is an expression that's used in a number of places in Shas, so it didn't work out. Lo kamistaya milsa. It didn't work out for the person to receive smicha. It's kind of an interesting expression. So yamachat. There was one day, Rabbi Yosef coming to Rabbi Yochanan, in front of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan apparently was able to confer smicha. So Amalahu, so Rabbi Yochanan asked the question, Mi'ika the other halakha Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho Olo. Does anybody know whether the halakha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho or not, with respect to whether an Eidus Miyuchedis is kosher? So Amalei, so Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim saw a wonderful opportunity. Wow, I have Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yochanina with me. And now is a great opportunity to have him have his moment in the sun to shine. And Rabbi Yochanan will see what a big Talmud Chacham he is, and he'll give him smicha. So Amalei Shimon Yochanan, Den Yada, ha ha, my great protege over here, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, he can answer your question. So Amalei, Lema, Lema Ezo. So Rabbi Yochanan says, so let him say what the halacha is, whether the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho or not. So Amalei, Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim responded, Lisvachem Abaresha. Sure, he'll tell you, But first, you got to give him smicha. So that was his condition. So he figured, this is great. This is how I'm going to ensure that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Kanina is going to get smicha. So, samchei, good. So he gave him smicha. Samalei b'ni emorli, keitzot shemata. So then he put on Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Kanina and said, so tell me, what's the halacha now that I gave you smicha and you're supposed to be such a shining star? Samalei, haha, kach shemati. This is what I heard. Shemode Rabbi Yeshua, this was his post-smicha exam, right? So first he got the smicha, then he had the exam. That was smart in this case. They say, kach shemati, shemode Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, Rabbi Nassan. The Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha agrees with Rabbi Nassan. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says that it's okay for the Edom not to see their Edus at the same time, so he agrees with Rabbi Nassan that when they testify, they can testify at different times. So I'm a lezeh, utzrachli. So Rabbi Yochanan said, for this I needed you. When it comes to the actual Re'iyah, when it comes to the actual Edus itself, Rabbi Shimon Korcha said they don't have to see the Edus at the same time. So obviously, when it comes to the rendering the testimony, that's less chamor, that's less of a big deal that they're able to render the testimony one after the other. So of course, Rabbi Shimon Korcha would agree to Rabbi Nassan. That doesn't tell me that whether or not the halakha is like Rabbi Shimon Korcha, so he felt like he had been hoodwinked a little bit, that somehow he didn't end up getting his answer, but he ended up giving him the smicha. So then the question was, so is the smicha valid smicha or not? So we revoke the smicha. Should the smicha be taken away once the smicha has been conferred? Because Rabbi Yochanan didn't get the bargain of his deal. He didn't get the answer that he was promised from this wonderful, promising protege. So Amalei, so he came to the conclusion, you know what? Ho'il ve'alisa lo teired. Since you have already risen, I've already given you smicha, then you shall not descend. You will be allowed to keep your smicha. So what did we learn from this? So I'm Rabbi Zeir. So Rabbi Zeir says we learned something from this. What we learned from it is not entirely clear. Rabbi Zeir says, Shema mina gabba rabba. He says we learn from here that somebody who is a very substantial personality is a gabba rabba. He's a big time achacham. Kivan what? Kivan de samech samech. Ah. So our nusach in the Gemara says, Kivan de samech samech. That sounds like since he has conferred smicha, so the smicha stands. So according to this, it sounds like the gabba rabba is going on the person who confers the smicha. That if you have a gabba rabba who confers smicha, and it's already been given, and now he comes to the conclusion that maybe it would have been better not to have given the smicha, it doesn't matter, it's too late. Once it's been conferred by a gabba rabba, the smicha stands. So that's one girsa. But then there's another girsa in the Mesoras Hashas on the side of the page, and the other girsa in the Mesoras Hashas says, Kivan de istamech samach. It's since he has received smicha, therefore the smicha sticks. So according to this other girsa, the gabba rabba is not going on the person who confers the smicha, but the gabba rabba is going on the person who received the smicha. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina was not a kutli kani be'agma. He was not somebody who would say mei betzayim instead of mei betzim. He wasn't somebody who was simply a woodcutter in a swamp. He was somebody who was a legitimate Talmud Chacham. He was a legitimate Gavra Rabba. And therefore, according to this rendition, since he himself was legitimate, even though the smicha was conveyed based upon mistaken pretenses, nonetheless, the smicha stuck because he himself was a Gavra Rabba. This difference in Gersos is important in terms of understanding a Gemara earlier in the Masechta. Masechta Sanhedrin and Dab Zayin Amud Beis. Gemara on Dab Zayin Amud Beis talks about when it doesn't actually stick. The Gemara there is talking about the appointment of individuals essentially to serve as dayanim, to serve in a capacity where they needed smicha in order to be dayanim. The institution of smicha is really tied in very closely to the institution of Dayanus, that you need smicha, you need a samuch, in order to be able to function in a bezdin setting. That's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says that smicha lidoros is that a person will be called rabbi, be called rebbe, reish beis yud, says the Rambam, and he'll be able to don a filu dinei knosos, and that the person is able to serve in a dayan capacity. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Dav Zayin Amud Beis, talks about an appointment that was made where by the reish galusa, where the person did not, in fact, appear to have the requisite credentials. And the question was the appointment a valid appointment, or was the appointment not a valid appointment? So the Gemara says, find it over here, Debei Nasiya. So Debei Nasiya made the appointment. Ukma Dayan and Lo Abagamir. So they appointed a Dayan who was not learned. Wasn't learned.
So Amalei the Yehuda by Nachmena mitzorgmenei the Reish Lakish kum aleha ba'amora. So they told Yehuda ben Nachmeni, who was the mitorgamon of Reish Lakish, that you should service the mitorgamon of this fellow when he gets out in public and expose his deficiencies, that this is a person who basically has nothing to say. So kam gachin aleha. So he got up in front of Am Be'eda that we're now going to broadcast with this great new dayan, with this great new musmach, is going to say, and v'lam aleh v'lam idi. But he had absolutely nothing to say. So it turned out the person was like a silent stone. So Pasuk v'yomer, so he got up and quoted from the Pasuk in Chavakuk, Hoyoymer le'eit sakitza, woe upon those who say to a pizza of wood, get up, uri le'evin domain, or arise to a silent stone. Hu yore? Such a person is going to get up and be a yore yore. Such a person is going to get up and be a rabbi. Inehu tafusa v'chesed v'choruachin v'kirbo. Such a person might have all of the trimmings of gold and silver and all of the embellishments of money that may have enabled him to be appointed to such a position, but such an individual has ruach ein bekirbo, has no real ruach, has no real substance, and therefore, essentially, the person is a nothing. So the Rambam, taking off on this Gemara in Hilchos Sanhedrin at the end of Perek Dalet in Hilchos Sanhedrin. So the Rambam says, based on this Gemara, Misha'eno, it's understood by the Nosei Kelim, is based on this Gemara, Misha'eno Roy Ladun, a person who is not Roy Ladun, Mipnei She'eno Yodea, either because the person knows nothing, because remember, this is a person who got up and he just wasn't able to say anything, he didn't have any knowledge, or Mipnei She'eno Hagun. Or the Rambam adds, if he's not Hagun, and that's based on the citation in the Pasuk and another Psukim of this idea of the person being adorned with Zahav Echesev, the person may have lots of money, and that may have enabled him to secure the position. That is not a valid reason for a person to be appointed. She'avar Rosh Golus, and the Reish Galusa decided that they were going to appoint this person, even though they're not actually qualified. V'nasan lo v'shus, and gave the person v'shus, so shetol be'ezdim nasan lo v'shus. And the Rambam goes further and says, don't think that this is only a governmental thing, a governmental disqualification. It's the Reish Galusa that gets up and does it. Even if a Bezdin, even if you have Masmichim, who get up and they make a mistake, and they appoint somebody who's not worthy to be appointed, ain't a Reshus mo'elis lo klum, so this permission is not going to be of any value, ad sheyeh roy, until the person is actually worthy. So the Rambam uses very strong language, ain't a Reshus mo'elis lo klum, that it does not count for anything. And the Mefarshim explained, the Ma'arik explains, based on the Lashon of the Rambam, that it is akin to the Pasuk that was quoted in Chavakuk, that it's like trying to make a silent stone speak. Just like the silent stone remains a stone, so you can't get Torah out of a stone. You can't make this person into a rabbi, even if you call the person a rabbi. It just doesn't work. It's an eno klum. It's an eben domein. Then the Rambam adds a very interesting lashon. The Rambam says, shehamakdish ba'amum l'mizbeach, because the rule is that if you're makdish an animal, which is already a ba'amum, for purposes of a kodshei mizbeach, for purposes of being offered as a korban, ain kedusha chalalav. So there's no kedusha for such an animal. So since it's just like there's no kedusha for such an animal, so too there is no kedusha for such an individual to receive the mantle of being a samach. Such a person would not, in fact, have the status of a rabbi altogether, because it's essentially akin to a mekach tos. The person has to be worthy of being mekabel, the title, on some level. Now, it's interesting, because the Gemara doesn't give this comparison to a makdish ba'amum l'mizbeach. The Maharik, in a famous essay that everybody quotes in Simen Kuf Yud Zayin, and the Maharik says that it's because, if you look in the Gemara, so the Gemara says that in the beginning of Parsha Shoftim, it talks about the appointment of Dayanim. So the Gemara over there talks about how in the middle of the Parsha of Dayanim, there's a pasuk that says, Lo sitadacha asherah kol eitz, eitzel mizbach Hashem alokecha asher ta'aseh loch. And the Gemara there says it must be that we're talking about some, not just the notion of not planting a Avodah Zarah, because why in the middle of the Parsha of Shoftim would we be talking about a Avodah Zarah? There must be some allusion to the appointment of Dayanim. So this Pasuk of Losita L'Chak Asherah, it must be an allusion to that if you appoint an unworthy, a Dayan She'enu Hagun, so it's like building an Asherah, it's like building an Avodah Zarah. So there are two other Pesukim there in that series of Pesukim. One says Losakim L'Chak Matzeva, and the Rambam in fact quotes that Pasuk in Paragimel, when the Rambam in Paragimel of Hilchos Sanhedrin is talking about individuals who are potentially not roy to be appointed as a dayanim. So the Rambam quotes over there, this is Perek Gimel Halacha Ches. Kol amami lehem nisra dayan she'enu hagun kidu heki matzeva shenem avalo sakim lecha matzeva shir sanei Hashem alokecha. So they ask on the Rambam, the Gemara doesn't quote that pasuk of losakim lecha matzeva. Samarik says no, because the Rambam figured there are three psukim in a row, losita, losakim, and losizbach. So the pasuk of losakim, just like the Gemara says the pasuk of losita is talking about appointing a dayan she'enu hagun, so the Rambam assumes that the pasuk of losakim is also talking about appointing a dayan she'enu hagun. And by the same token, says the Ma'arik, it must be that the Rambam assumed that the next pasuk of losizbach or Hashem Elokecha, of not offering a korban, that's an improper korban to Hashem Elokecha, is also some sort of a reference or an allusion to a dayan. And it must be that that's the drasha that the Rambam came up with, that pasuk must be an allusion to this notion that if you appoint a dayan who's unworthy, it's like being makdish abal mum l'mizbech, when we know the ain kedusha chola olav. Yes.
And the Rambam is basically saying in the end that if it's unworthy, it could be revoked. Like,
the Rambam is saying you don't even have to revoke it. Well, so the Rambam is saying that it's not chal to begin with. In other words, revocation, so the Rambam over here is not talking about the notion of revocation. The Rambam is saying the revocation is redundant. That if you confer smicha upon an unworthy individual, it simply doesn't work. Presumably you can publicize the fact that it doesn't work. But even in that Gemara and Dav Zayin Amud Beis, they have to publicize anything. This person came out and people saw that he had nothing to say. So the Rambam says, so we see that it doesn't actually work. Yes.
Who's to say whether he knows or he doesn't know? That's a big question. What area does he know and what he doesn't know? How many times does he have to make a mistake?
Now, the Rambam says that in order for a person to receive smicha, even for a particular inyan, the person has to be roi lahovas b'kol haTorah kula. The person has to know everything. So according to the Rambam, that might be a more simple equation. Now, of course, this entire comparison by the Rambam requires further investigation, because this is Hilchos Sanhedrin. So in Hilchos Sanhedrin, what do you know about Hilchos being makdish ma'mum l'mizbeach? So you want to know about what the din really is, so you got to turn to Hilchos Yisurim Mizbeach. So if you turn to Hilchos Yisurim Mizbeach, Perek Aleph Halacha Tes, so you see that if somebody is makdish a ba'mum the Mizbeach, so kedusha cholola. So it actually does receive kedusha. The person's not supposed to. It's an aveir. It's over balav, says the Rambam. But there is actually a certain level of kedusha. So what's going on over here when the Rambam says ain kedusha chala alav? So it must be that what the Rambam means is that if you look over there, and you look also in the second parak of Maseches Bechoras Daf Yudala, that talks about im kadam mumon lehekdeshan. If you makdish an animal and the mum was there beforehand, so it does require pidia. But it seems that there's no kedusha saguf. The animal doesn't have any kind of kedusha saguf, and that's why you're allowed to be poda the animal even after it dies. Even though normally we say podinus akashim akilan leklovim, so you're allowed to be poda this animal even after it dies. It doesn't seem that there would be an inyan of hamada v'haracha in such a case as well. So it seems that somebody who's makdish abamum the mizbeach, even though it's an e-oven mehani type of situation, that's only with respect to the kedushas mamun, but not with respect to the kedushas saguf. So if there's kedushas mamun with respect to such an animal, but there's no kedusha saguf with respect to such an animal. So when the Rambam says ain kedusha chala olav, so the Rambam means there's no kedusha saguf. So here you're trying to confer a kedusha saguf on this individual, not a kedusha mamon. Mamon we know he has, could have all the zav chesif in the world, but we're talking about the guf. So we want to be able to confer a real kedusha saguf on this individual, that they should be a samach. So the person's not going to be a samach if they're not roi lakach. Then the question becomes, okay, then how do you understand the notion of kivan de samach samach? So there's a nice sefer that was written by a Rav Nathan Nata Zuber, who was a rabbi in New Jersey from 1926 to 1976. He was a Chasheb Rav who was very close to the Teitz family, and he wrote a couple of Sfarim. One was in memory of his father, which was called Zichron Menachem, his father Menachem Mendelzuber, and one was a Sefer of Chidushim on Gemara, and in both of these Sfarim, he quoted this Gemara in Sanhedrin, and he basically asked the question, since we have a principle, Kimin Disamech Samech, so how can the Rambam say that if in a case where a person was not Roy Lekach and they received some actual smicha, even if, let's say it was in the Rambam, says even if it was a Chashav Bezin, it was Shito Bezin, Nasan Lo Vashut, the smicha wouldn't stand. So he says that's why you need the different Gersa in the Gemara. If the Gersa would be Kimin Disamech Samech, at any time in which you had a worthy Bezdin, a worthy Rav, confer smicha, that the smicha was going to stick because of the fact that the Samech is a Gabarabba, so then in fact this other halacha wouldn't make any sense. So that's why he says that the right Gersa must be Kima de Ishman Samech, that it must be that in order for the smicha to stick, it has to be that the person who received the smicha, even if it was conferred in error, was a Gabarabba, was a person who was in a high level. Maybe the Masmich made a mistake and didn't intend to give the smicha to this individual unless the person met a certain expectation that the person ended up not meeting. But if the person who received the smicha fundamentally was a gavarabba, so therefore it must be that under those circumstances that's when the smicha sticks. However, if the person is not a gavarabba and the person is simply not roy altogether, so then the smicha doesn't stick. So that's the distinction that seems to be the appropriate distinction between these two gemaras. So the question then is, so what about a case where maybe when the person received the smicha, they were roy. Maybe it was determined by those who conferred the smicha. The person passed all of their exams, the person seemed to be a fine character and so forth, but then afterwards they go off and they do all kinds of ridiculous things. They go off and they're no longer being shomer halacha, and they're getting up berabim and they're saying things which are, doing things which are anti-halacha. So what about in such a case? What type of precedent do we have al-piyah gemara, al-piyah the poskim, for smicha in such a case? So first of all, we have to look at whether there's a notion of conditional smicha. So the Gemara on Daf Hei Amud Beis seems to indicate that there is such a thing as a notion of conditional smicha. The Gemara in Hei Amud Beis says that what? Pshita lepalga hakama demahani. So the Gemara says to give smicha for certain things and not other things, that we know is good. You can give smicha for yara yara and not give smicha for yadin yadin. You can give smicha for yara yara and for yadin yadin and not for yata yatir. Right, to be matzeh b'choris. So you can give a partial smicha. The Rambam has this chiddush that even when the Gemara indicates that there was different individuals who received the partial smicha, they had to be roy to receive smicha l'chol haTorah kula. And our Gemara doesn't seem to say this. I guess the Mishnah says he has a question. Where does the Rambam get this from? So the Lecha Mishnah points out that the Rambam seems to have gotten it from the Yerushalmi and Chagiga. The Yerushalmi and Chagiga says that when partial smicha is given, a person nonetheless has to be roy for smicha l'chol haTorah kula. So the Gemara, so that appears to be the source for the notion that the person has to be roy. And there's a further machlokus, actually bizman hazeh, as to whether this principle applies bizman hazeh. Do we say that now that our smicha is not the original kind of smicha, but it's just this netilas rishus, a variation of smicha? So in this netilas rishus variation of smicha, do we say that even if a person is not roy for everything, that a person can still get smicha in a particular area? The specific case that the Rama talks about in Siman Reish Mem Beis is the notion of a person who's just performed to be a Masada Gittin Mechalitzos, but he doesn't know anything else. He could do Gittin Mechalitzos, but can't do anything else. So do we say that such a person can be appointed for that limited area? The Rama seems to end up indicating that he thinks that this would be okay, and the Shach seems to quote as well, also from a comment that the Rama makes in the Dalki Moshe, he thinks this is okay. It's interesting, because in a tshuva of the Rama, in the tshuva of the Rama, Siman Chof Dalet, the Rama says exactly the opposite. It's a little bit difficult to reconcile the Rama, but the Aruch HaShulchan, talking about the same case in Siman Reish Mem Beis, says that he thinks that it's not a good idea. He thinks that given all the potential obstacles, bizman hazeh, people doing things that aren't appropriate and getting a little bit too big for their breeches and so forth, so the Aruch HaShulchan thinks that even bizman hazeh as well, we don't just appoint if a person is not roy for more, if a person only knows a limited area. But this runs to the question as well, to what degree do we apply the original principles of smicha to the version of smicha that we have bizman hazeh? According to at least the Aruch HaShulchan's approach, it would appear that we would extend it further, even Bizman HaZeh, that whatever were the original limitations of Smicha, the original parameters of Smicha would perhaps be applicable Bizman HaZeh as well. And even the Ramah is not entirely consistent on this point, because the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch is a little bit different than what the Ramah says in his Tshuva. So Ramah in his Tshuva says that we have to be very, very careful as well, because of the notion that we have so many cases, Bizman HaZeh says, where you give Smicha to somebody and suddenly they become the Gadol Ador. As soon as they have Smicha, so they get up and they declare that they know everything and they're not even paying attention to their elders anymore, and suddenly they're the only act in town. So the Ramah also seemed to have a certain concern about this as well. Yes?
Let's say the ones that gave Smicha are not around anymore. Who's supposed to take away that Smicha?
That's the question. So the Gemara in Daf Hei Amud Aleph says that there was a fight that once took place. There was a little bit of nastiness, it seems, that took place between whom? One second. Daf Hei with the son of Rabba, the son of Rav Huna. He was having a fight with the Beresh Galusa. So I'm a lami naikun akina veshusa. I didn't get my smicha from you. Nakina veshusa me Abba Mari. I got my smicha from my father, Rav Huna, Abba Mari me Rav, and he got it from Rav. Rav and Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Chiya, and he got it from Rabbi Chiya, me Rabbi. Rabbi Chiya got it from Rabbi. So what was the relevance? So who cares? Where he got his smicha from, that suddenly he's getting into this fight with the Reish Galusa. So so Rashi over here says, and this is brought down the halacha, Rashi says, what was the significance? He says, I didn't get reshus from you, but any kafuf lachem. I'm not subservient to you. So from this, the Aruch HaShulchan writes, others write as well, that it appears that there's an inyan that if a person receives smicha from a particular individual, they are kafuf to that individual. There's a certain kafifus, there's a certain subordination, a certain subservience that's supposed to take place. Now this doesn't outright stand for this, declare that the person who confers smicha has the right to revoke smicha at any point in time, but it does indicate that a part of what is expected from the musmach is to remain subservient and to remain loyal to the values and the principles that were handed down by the masmichim, so that he would not act in a way which would offend the masmichim or the values of the masmichim that have been conferred for purposes of smicha. And this is important as we get to the Gemara here on the bottom of Daf Hei Amud Beis, because the Gemara says, after it talks about the possibility of a partial smicha, so the Gemara says, okay, so we know that a partial smicha is possible. Al Tanai Mai. What about a conditional smicha? Is it possible for smicha to be given on condition? So Tashma, so the Gemara says, well, we see the Amale Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Shimon. Rabbi Yochanan said to Rav Shimon, Arei atav yoshusenu atchatavu etzlenu. He said to Rav Shimon that you are subject to our you are given a reshus from us. You are birshusenu. You have reshus from us for a certain period of time. Ah, the Shetavo Etzleinu, until you come back to us, because Rav Shimon had gone down to Babel. They needed Rav Shimon to be able to focus as a Rav in Babel. So he said, for this period of time, we're going to be giving you the credentials that we're going to give you the Rishus. But it's a limited period of time. We're only giving it for a circumscribed period, only Lizman. And when that Zman expires, so then the Smicha is going to elapse. So we see from here that there is such a notion. This is talking about contemporary Smicha. It's talking about Netilas Rishus. We're giving you the Rishus. The Rishus is going, so it appears, the Rishus is going to be circumscribed for a period of time. It can be out tonight. Well, I guess that if you put together the Gemara on Daf Hei Amud Beis with the Gemara on Hei Amud Aleph, I haven't seen anybody do this explicitly, but we'll talk about implicitly in just a moment. One could say, well, one of the Tanaim is a Tanai of being appropriately kafuf, that your masmichim have required of you a certain standard of behavior, and if your masmichim should determine at any point in time that the jig is up, that the smicha should no longer be valid anymore, so maybe one can argue that that is built into the smicha. But certainly, if it is explicitly built into the smicha, that the smicha is out tonight. So there it appears that we have a mefurish mucker on the bottom of Daf Hei Amud Beis, that certainly such a mefurish tanai could be effective. In fact, this may explain the story which is found in the book, the biography of Rabbi Dr. Bernard Rebel, who was the first president of Yeshiva University. So there is a story in the biography that was written by Rabbi Aaron Rakepich Lita. So the story goes that in 1933, this really is going way back when, so in 1933, apparently there was an individual who received smicha from our institution, from Yeshiva at Rabbeinu Yitzchok Elchanan, and this individual who received smicha violated the terms of what was expected of him. What was expected? That he not go and serve as a rabbi in a congregation that had mixed pews, that did not have a proper separation of the sexes, and he requested that this individual who went to such a synagogue would leave the synagogue in the event that the person in question, that the musmach of the yeshiva, would be unsuccessful at being able to correct the situation. So he wrote to the so there was one case where a yeshiva graduate was not successful at being able to transform the congregation, and the congregation had both mixed pews and a mixed choir. I'm reading from page 165 of this book, and says the book, his ordination was revoked. How is it revoked? So Bernard Rebel wrote to the graduate on September 19th, 1933. It grieves me to inform you that since you refused to leave temple where the sacred laws of traditional Judaism are violated, I urgently request that you return the conditional document of ordination that you received from the yeshiva. Now, it sounds from the lashon that whatever the nusach was of the klaf that was issued at that point in time, it sounds like it was a conditional document, unless Dr. Rebel was making the argument that every single klaf by definition is conditional based on the Gemara of having to be kafuf to the masmich. But otherwise, the simple pshat of the word seems to be that the document itself contained the condition on it. So we know that smicha can be given out tonight. So if it was given out tonight, so then for sure we understand that it could have been revoked. Then he went on to say the basic purpose of the yeshiva is to guard the sanctity of Jewish law in this land. If you will not return the document of ordination, I will be obligated to publish newspaper announcements declaring the nullification of your ordination. And the text goes on to say, this rabbi did not heed Rabbi Revel's request, and the yeshiva publicly announced the cancellation of his ordination and proclaimed that one can no longer rely on his answers to inquiries of Jewish law. No source cited for that, by the way. However, that appears to be some sort of precedent for the notion of revoking smicha, but again, perhaps in this more limited situation of the smicha being granted in a conditional fashion to begin with. Now, we have as well a record that from a book called Biography of Rabbi Yisrael Hildesheimer, who is the head of the Hildesheimer Seminary in Germany. The book is by David Ellenson. It's called Rabbi Yisrael Hildesheimer and the Creation of Modern Orthodox, of a modern Jewish Orthodoxy. I think Rabbi Yitzchak Knack for sharing this with me. And the book on page 76 talks about a situation where Rabbi Hildesheimer had conferred smicha. The Hildesheimer Seminary had conferred smicha upon a certain individual named Schreiber, apparently. And Schreiber, after receiving his rabbinical ordination from Hildesheimer, migrated to Berlin, where he joined the Reform camp. And that was a big concern in those days, that they might be losing people to the Reform camp. And there was a question that was posed to Hildesheimer whether Schreiber should be regarded as a rabbi. And Hildesheimer replied by stating emphatically that a knowledge of Jewish sources and Jewish law alone was not enough to qualify one for the title of rabbi. To merit the title, a man must live according to Jewish law. Schreiber did not fulfill this last requirement. Hildesheimer concluded his letter to Baum by declaring, I herewith rescind the rabbinical title which was bestowed years ago, in brackets, by me upon Schreiber. So it appears there as well that we have some precedent for the notion of actually revoking, rescinding, smicha in this particular case. Schreiber's failure to abide by Orthodox standards of religious practice meant that Hildesheimer could not legitimate his claim to the title of rabbi. And it goes on to say that there may have been theological reasons as well, that he didn't necessarily have the correct emunas v'deos, independent of whatever his practice may have been, but that would be clear from his association with a movement that repudiated many of the basic notions of Orthodox Jewish dogma. However, if you look at a footnote to the book, which recounts an interview with Rabbi Eliezer Berkowitz. Rabbi Eliezer Berkowitz was himself a graduate of the Hildesheimer Seminary. Rabbi Berkowitz passed away, I think, not even that long ago, right? Maybe about 20 years ago, something like that. So Rabbi Berkowitz apparently shared with the author of the book in February 1979 that there was, in fact, a codicil that was added to the certificate of ordination that one received from the Hildesheimer Seminary. It stipulated that if the ordinee accepted a reformed pulpit, his ordination was automatically rescinded. And therefore, this was, according to the account of Rabbi Berkowitz, a built-in Tanai in the ordination itself. The origin of this codicil obviously harkened back at least to the turn of the century. Professor Lou Silverman was kind enough to show them, reading on the footnote, Professor Lou Silverman was kind enough to show me the certificate of ordination, which his teacher, Jacob Lauterbach, received from the Rabbinic Seminar, which, by the way, only began reissuing Smicha about a year ago. I think that some of our Rosh Yeshiva attended the first Smichaika Smicha ceremony that occurred within the Hildesheimer Seminary, the now rehabilitated Hildesheimer Seminary in Berlin, just about a year ago. So I don't know if the nusach of the klafim that they gave out last year is followed in the model of this one, but apparently the certificate issued at the turn of the century warns the ordinee not to serve a congregational community where there is a mixed choir of men and women or where an organ is played in the synagogue. Should the ordinee serve such a community, his ordination was to be retroactively rescinded. So this was once again built in the actual smicha certificate that was issued to the individuals. Now, there are, yes?
You say retroactively, does that mean any ruling that they did in the past is, I'm afraid, not a ruling?
It's interesting because the lashon that's used was retroactively rescinded, but it would be sort of difficult to say that, to go so far. Meaning, you know, one of the issues really is that the Rabbanim would have these smichas, would use the smicha. I mean, the Aruch HaShulchan talks about this, to claim a job as a rav of a community or something like that. It's more questionable what it means if somebody receives a smicha and then they kind of function in their own lives independent of the smicha document, that they don't have a job within the organized Orthodox community or within a community over which the institution that confers smicha would have any kind of jurisdiction whatsoever. So in such a case, are they really functioning in life subject to the smicha, or does their defection from the community sort of automatically indicate that the smicha is no longer effective because they're not operating within the community of the smicha? I think that one could potentially make that type of an argument where there is a kind of a self-destruction, if you will, of the smicha when a person clearly is not operating in a way which is coupled to the standards of the institution that conferred the smicha, when nobody in the right mind would necessarily associate the person or their actions with that institution, one could certainly make such an argument. But it's interesting that there are a couple of cases, both in Hungary in the 19th century, in which which we have Shilos Tshuvos that talk about an actual revocation of smicha. The first is the Chassam Sofer, and the second is the Yehuda Yalev, Rabbi Yehuda Assad, who really took over the rabbinical post of the Chassam Sofer after the Chassam Sofer was nifter. So here we're talking about the community in Pressburg, basically in the early 19th century. Yes, you had a question?
No, I was curious. Did that happen at a later point before the self-destruction?
That's a question. You know, the again, according to certainly the way that the Rambam understands the Bez Din Fagir operating with Zman Hazeh, as long as you have Gimel Ksherim. The Rambam doesn't really require this notion of smukhan. As long as you have the Gimel Ksherim, and this seems to be the Psak Halacha L'maisa, sort of serving on the gear, even if it turns out that one of them was a Samuch whose smicha was taken away, even if we give a sort of a special status of samach to smicha bizman hazeh for those purposes, as we mentioned within Tosfos, certainly the Rambam doesn't seem to require that for the gear to be bound. So in most cases of masim that would be performed nowadays, even if we say a person shouldn't have been operating in a particular position, you tell somebody what to do. So you might get the answer right. It doesn't make the answer automatically wrong because you told someone what to do. If you told somebody what to do and it was wrong to begin with, so even when you had smicha, it was wrong. If it was right to begin with, so even when you do it and the person doesn't have smicha, it was still right afterwards. So it would really only be relevant if, for example, a gear would automatically not be valid anymore if it turns out the person wasn't samach. But we probably don't require that the person be an actual samach anyway for the gear to be valid, certainly b'dieved anyway. So therefore, unless the person was a psul at the time that they performed the gear, which would be a separate question, the fact that he became a psul anyway, and then based on a condition of the smicha was retroactively rescinded as an illusion of the Hildesheim smicha, probably would not cause the conversion to become invalid. But it's a very good question. So the Ksav Sofer had a case that was presented to him of a Rav who apparently was appointed to be a Rav of a Kehillah. So there was a position that certainly was in the jurisdiction of the world of the Ksav Sofer, where it mattered what he had to say about the person, and there were all kinds of tainas against the Rav. One taina against this individual is that they weren't he wasn't meticulous with respect to keeping halakha. Didn't wash netilas yadayim before eating, didn't say birchas hamazon after benching. A second tain against the person was that the person was mizalzel and other tamidei chachamim, and that the person said publicly that they did not believe in skava onish, that they did not believe in one of the yudgimo midos of what we're supposed to believe in. They didn't believe in the notion of skava onish. And the third thing that was alleged against this individual is that he had the temerity to be messiah or two gittin in a city in which did not have a kviya shem, which did not have an official designation for being a place where gittin could be performed, and he didn't consult with the gedolim of the city before making a decision that it would be appropriate for him to go about being Masada Gittin in that city. So the Ksam Sofer says, with respect to the first taina that the person isn't so meticulous in their own Shemiras and Mitzvos, so we are not moving a person from his position based on that. There's a whole discussion, there's a Tshuva Sarama, actually, that says that we're not moving anybody, just even though a person may have sinned, we're not moving a person from the, whether he's on the Sanhedrin to whether he has a relatively lowly position from the Sanhedrin, the Chazan HaKnesses, whatever it is, we're not moving a person from his position because of the fact that he engages in his personal sins, unless he sins in a very public and flagrant fashion. So the Rambam, in the end of Perek Yud Zayin, Hilchos Sanhedrin, talks about a Rosh Yeshiva. He's talking about Nasi Sanhedrin, but the terminology is Rosh Yeshiva. He talks about a Rosh Yeshiva, who's Chata, so he says such a person would be removed from his post. So Mestama, the Rambam is talking about a person who sins in a very public and flagrant fashion. But if a person sins in a private fashion, so the general principle that's followed goes to my Ashri, brings this down also in... he brings this down in Elul Megalchin, and Elul Megalchin he has this on the side of the Rosh as well, that we're not moving a person Migdulaso so quickly, especially for in the event that the person has only sinned privately. However, so then he goes on, but what about the second allegation that the person is kofar in basic yesodos of emuna? So there he says, that would be good grounds for removing the person, it's true, but the only people who are making this allegation are the members of his congregation, the Nogim B'Davar, because they want to get rid of him. So therefore, I would require better aidus before a decision can be made. But then he says, as far as the third allegation, this was known, this was public, this was in all the newspapers, everybody heard that this fellow in front of the whole world got up and was Mesader to Gittin in a place where he didn't have jurisdiction, and he violated his rabbinic trust by doing such a public halakhic act without the necessary protocols. So he's not going to follow the necessary protocols. He says the Ksam Sofer, so on that basis, he should be removed from his position altogether. And not only should he be removed from his position, he says, such a person should definitely be removed from his position. But not only should he be removed from that shul, but rather you should take away the title of Rav from this person altogether because of the public nature of his violation. And we should remove from him the crown of being able to be Moralash, before they knew the types of actions that he would engage in. And he should no longer be a public obstacle. So according to this Jew of the Ksam Sofer, even though Mistama, at the time that the individual was appointed, he did not necessarily exhibit all of these this problematic behavior, he had not yet committed all of these violations, given that the person did these things afterwards, and in particular because he was so public about it, and so he so publicly went against halachic protocol, so on that basis, says the Ksam Sofer, on that basis, he should not be called Rav anymore, and his smicha should be rescinded. And the Ksam Sofer doesn't talk about what the process should be for removing the smicha, just says that the Yitlu Mimenu Atar Shem Rav Lagami, that this is something that should just happen. So you could ask, so what's the basis? The Ksam Sofer doesn't explain what the basis is. So either the basis is that given that smicha today is in a different category than the original smicha, so we don't have to necessarily find the source regarding how original smicha would be removed. And it could be the Netilas Rishus. So the idea is that Netilas Rishus is the Netilas Rishus of the Masmichim, of the community that are represented by the Masmichim. And when it's clear that the person is going against the norms of that community, which is really against the norms in the Masmichim, even if you didn't have the original Masmichim, Yibokah Smicha, it's just understood that the Rishus can be given, the Rishus can be given, to can be taken away. And even if you're going to fit it into the paradigm of original smicha, it could be that the Gemara is indicating that smicha can be given in a circumscribed fashion. Every smicha, maybe even if it's not explicit that it's being given out tonight, the way that maybe it was in the YU smicha of 1933, and the way that it explicitly was with respect to the Hildesheimer smicha of the turn of the century, maybe the Ksam Sofer is also suggesting that every single smicha should be understood as having built-in conditions as to what is required in order for a person to remain with the title of Rav B'Yisrael. That could very well be the case. And finally, the tshuva of the Yehuda Yale, of Rav Yehuda Asad, in the who was, as I mentioned, the successor of the Ksam Sofer. So he has sort of it's very difficult, actually, to make. This is the Ksam Sofer, by the way, is in Chelek Eichos Shemishpun Simen Kuf Samach Beis. The Yehuda Yale is in Chelek Aleph of Orach Chaim Simen Lamed Zayin. So his case is very difficult to make out. It seems like there was a Rav of a Shul who got up on Rosh Hashanah and he got angry at his congregation and he was Mevatel the Mitzvah Sayom. He sent everybody home. Nobody got around to blowing the shofar. He was upset. They wouldn't let him give a drasha. He gave him one drasha. They wouldn't let him give the second drasha. He got angry at everybody. The whole story is a little bit cryptic. But it seems that whatever he did, as a result, nobody was able to observe Rosh Hashanah properly that year. And he made a tremendous buffoon out of himself. And he made the tremendous buffoonery out of the Torah and out of Tefillah. So it seems that the Yehuda Yala was a little bit upset because the smicha was given by one of his Talmidim. So in this case, he explicitly says that smicha should be taken away because of the fact that we have a paradigmatic case of a parnas who is matil ema yaseva ala tzibur shelo l'shem shemayim, and you can't have a parnas, you can't have a rabbinic leader who operates in that fashion. So he says, Miyad Gezeirasi Omer. So he said, I imposed the Gezeir, a Gezeir al Tamidi, a Rav. He gives the name of his Talmud, Sheyifarsim Etfus B'chol HaYitonim, that he should publicize in all of the newspapers, Shumevatil also Aksav Shinosan Hu Biyado. Indicating, I didn't give the smicha. My Talmud gave the smicha. So I was goes there on my Talmud that my Talmud had better be mevatel the smicha immediately. Had better rescind and revoke the smicha immediately. Shall mevatel success shenasnu miyado ezo smichas heter hara. Interesting lashon. Ezo smicha. They gave him some sort of smicha. Said. So Hubatel and Mavutel Kecheres says Kecheres Anishver. So he said he should have immediately publicized that the smicha is Batel Mavutel Kecheres Anishver. So that tshuva as well indicates that if a person acts in a fashion which brings tremendous public disrepute upon the position of Rav and upon the smicha. So then, certainly following in the footsteps of the Chassam Sofer, the indication is that it would be appropriate to rescind the smicha, but he's a little bit more explicit about the notion of having a requirement, or at least an adifus, a preference, that the smicha actually be revoked by the person who granted the smicha. That requirement, if it indeed would be a requirement, and you would say maybe based on the Gemara and Daf Heyam and Aleph, since part of the idea of the smicha is that you kapuf to the person who actually gave you the smicha, that becomes more complicated if any of the masmicha are not around when a person is maktiach tavshila, when a person actually does something which would be in repudiation of what the smicha is supposed to stand for. On the other hand, if we say that there's almost a built-in tanai that when a person acts in a fashion which goes against the spirit of what was expected and what everybody understood was expected with respect to the smicha, so maybe that might be some sort of built-in tanai. So it's interesting, given that there is this book out there that indicates that our yeshiva actually had a case of a revocation of a smicha back in 1933. So I tried to do a little bit of research to find out whether anybody had heard of a notion of our yeshiva. We've had 2,900 musmachim over the years. And I don't know that the case that is recorded in Dr. Revel's, in the biography of Dr. Revel, of somebody who went to a congregation with mixed pews and didn't leave, even after a couple of years, that situation never repeated itself with any of the other musmachim. I can't say that's necessarily the case. So I just tried to investigate to find out whether anybody had heard either of this case or of any other revocation of smicha in our institutional history. So I asked Rabbi Khalap, who actually told me that he did not recall any case. He wasn't even familiar with this case back from 1933. So it seems that the practice of our yeshiva over time has been that we don't revoke smicha. That it could be that nobody ever for many years did anything to provoke it, but at least certainly based on the standard that was articulated by Dr. Revel, according to the book, it would seem that maybe that standard could have been met. It's difficult to be able to assure the conduct of Talmidim in every single case, especially in 2,900 different cases. You try to do your best in terms of educating Talmidim, in terms of preparing Talmidim for the rabbinate in the best possible fashion, but you can't always guarantee what a person is going to do afterwards. If there was at one point in time some sort of a conditional nusach that was built into our smicha ordination that seems to not be in existence anymore, we can argue about whether it should be reinserted. I'm not sure what it would say. You might have to have one of any number of tanaim that it would have to be built in there. Maybe we'd have to constantly add to it and revise it. We also live in a time, unlike the situation described by the Chassam Sofer, I don't know that we have the same jurisdiction. The Chassam Sofer could say the person should be removed from his post and the smicha should be revoked and nobody would be somek on the person anymore. But we live in a complicated world where we don't necessarily have the same authority or jurisdiction over the broader community, where if you make a statement, people listen to you. Sometimes, of course, it's a cause célèbre. If you get up and you make a statement that you'd be revoking a particular person's smicha, so then it might draw more attention and give more publicity to the person, that the person might turn into positive publicity in certain circles as well. We also live in a time in which there is a tremendous feeling of negativity towards what some view as a more right-wing type of takeover attitude of the broader community. You look at what's going on in Beit Shemesh and some of the attitudes regarding that whole incident. It's a complicated thing. And it could be that the way in which you get messages across more effectively is through a positive promotion of our values and our ideals. And if what the world sees are negative pronouncements, this one is possible, that one is possible, everybody understands that there are certain, I would hope, that there are certain types of acts that are outside of the halakhic pale, that are not part of Orthodox Judaism and are not part of certainly what our yeshiva stands for. Every now and then, we even issue public statements to make that clear when we think that there's a need for it. any negative type of statements could have a counterproductive effect. So where people would say, oh, look, they're just spewing negativity, and this just goes to show how backwards they are, and you don't want to send messages that are not going to have the constructive effect that were intended by Dr. Revel, by Rabbi Hildesheimer, by the Chassam Sofer, by the Yehuda Yale. You want to be able to spread messages that are going to increase love for Torah and appreciation for Torah values and an appreciation for halakha. So nowadays, it seems that probably it's more effective to be able to spread that in a positive fashion than to spread that with public condemnations whenever somebody does something wrong. It's our hope that those who in any way veer off, you know, the derech of halakha will see the light and will come back to an appreciation of Torah and Mitzvot, and that we should be successful in being able to educate all of our Tamidim, all of you, all of the others in the yeshiva, to be able to follow the proper ideals of Torah, and to be able to broadcast those values properly and effectively to the broader community. Thank you very much.
The bottom line, is that retroactive? Only being going off the derech, no?
Yeah.